Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. On this episode, we'll have in-depth coverage of a Carlotta area cannabis farm having issues with expansion, along with highlights of the recent state Senate debate between the District 2 candidates. But first, a rundown of today's top stories and headlines. This is KMUD News. Starting off, an update from us on set times for this Saturday's Mudstock, KMUD's annual block party at our station in Redway. Opening the show will be the Funicators at noon, followed by Spoon Circus at 1 p.m., the Mighty Dynamites at 1:45, Sohum Girls at 2:45, Latin Peppers at 3:45, Face Urchins at 4:45, 3D Man at 5:45, McKenu at 6:45, and closing down the show will be the Irie Rockers at 8 p.m. Again, these are set times for this weekend's Mudstock, KMUD's annual block party, this Saturday, May 16th, at our Redway Studios. Please be advised, we are shutting down part of Redway Drive for the festivities. We will see you all there. In late-breaking national news, Food and Drug Administration Commissioner Dr. Marty McCary has resigned. His tenure was controversial, and early reporting suggests much of the resignation had to do with the FDA authorizing fruit-flavored nicotine vapes, thought by many to be a risk to public health. McCary also received criticism from public health advocates for pandering to anti-vaccine groups during his tenure. Kyle Diamantis, a top FDA food regulator, was named interim commissioner of the FDA after McCary's resignation. The Shasta Trinity National Forest is planning prescribed fire operations starting this Tuesday, May 12th. They estimate this work could continue through the end of the week, as weather conditions allow and pending all required approvals. A prescribed fire operation began this morning, Tuesday, May 12th, at Hayward Flat Campground, north of Weaverville and south of Trinity Center on the shore of Trinity Lake. Fuel crews will be using an air curtain burner to consume fuels left after thinning operations at the campground. The area may close to the public for several days for public safety. Watch for warning signs along roads near all prescribed fire areas before and after burns. Now to our main stories. We'll start off with highlights from the recent debate for California State Senator for District 2. Similar to the governor's race, state senate races are set up as a top two primary, where two candidates move on to the general election in November, regardless of party preference. There are three candidates on the ballot for District 2, and all three took part in the debate at the Sea Ranch on the Sonoma coast, KMUD News reports. As we get closer to the June 2nd primary election in California, much of the focus has been on the state's governor's race, and it's 52 candidates that fill out much of the ballot that has already been mailed to registered voters. But as other races are on the primary ballot as well, notably the race for state senator for District 2, which goes all the way from the top of San Francisco Bay to the Oregon border. All of KMUD's radio broadcast zone is within State Senate District 2. The current holder of the office, State Senator Mark McGuire, has termed out of his position, as no one is allowed to serve as a California Assembly member or state senator for more than 12 years. That means someone new will be taken over as state senator for District 2. Currently, there are three candidates running for the position. They include Republicans Teef Gibbs and Aaron Smith, and Democratic Party candidate Damon Connolly. Recently, all three candidates got together for a debate at the Sea Ranch on the Sonoma coast. We've compiled some highlights on key questions for voters from the debate. We start with all three candidates introducing themselves, beginning with current Assembly member Damon Connolly.
I'm proud to be before you today as the only Democratic candidate in the race, and the stakes could not be higher. We know that virtually every day right now, with an out-of-control federal administration and a MAGA movement, our values as Californians are under threat. Protection of our immigrant neighbors, Our very democracy itself is under threat. In these dangerous times, and this is why I'm running, we need someone with the experience and the proven track record to hit the ground running from day one to get things done for our communities and stand up for those values.
Damon Connolly was followed by Tief Gibbs.
I earned my degree in economics from San Diego State University, which gives me a strong foundation to understand the real financial issues affecting families and businesses here at home. My husband and I own and operate our small business, Vintage Vehicles, right in downtown Novato. He is the mechanic and I do all the bookkeeping and some of the repairs. That experience keeps me closely connected to what local entrepreneurs go through every day, the risks, the hard work, the determination, and building something meaningful. I've served as president of the Novato Republican Women and as a California GOP delegate. And in these roles, I've advocated for the values and concerns of people in my district.
Republican Party candidate Aaron Smith then introduced himself.
I really want to see a lot less government. That's mostly why I'm here. I sit on a school board at Mark West, and we have a lot of things that Sacramento is telling us to do that I would like to see the school board be able to determine. It's kind of ironic that I'm running for office, seeing as I don't like government.
For the first question, candidates were asked their opinions and potential solutions to rural residents across District 2 losing access to landline phones, which is especially perilous in regions still without cell service. We'll begin with Tief Gibbs.
As far as I can see, there's a couple of practical solutions that I like with respect to the more of the rural areas. And a lot of it, I think, has to be targeted. It has to be targeted for the area. And it's called Targeted Gap Coverage Projects, which I think is a good idea. It's instead of just blanketing everything and trying to keep it all, you identify the critical zones and the critical areas, the evacuation routes, fire-prone areas, neighborhoods with poor service, and you partner with the provider to install small cell towers, fixed wireless nodes, and potentially even keeping those copper lines in place.
Next to speak was Aaron Smith on the issue of rural landline access.
Okay, well, I did a little bit of digging on this. It looks like AT&T is going to be losing their case. The core definition for the carrier of last resort, it's already state law. And from what I read from the brief, it looks like it's going to be kicked out. To prevent that type of thing from happening, take it away from the Public Utilities Commission and actually put it into law. So it's not a rule, but a law. Then they'd have a hard time getting away.
Damon Connolly chimed in on the issue of continuing landline service to rural communities.
So I think, again, what distinguishes me in this race is it's an issue I'm actually working on now. And one of the things I do as part of my job is support good legislation or oppose bad legislation. So there was a bill last year to actually do away with carrier of last resort. In other words, take the position of AT&T. I was one of a few legislators who voted against that.
Next was two questions concerning rural healthcare, the first of which concerned strategies the candidates would employ to better allow mobile clinic access in rural areas. We'll start with Aaron Smith, who emphasized preventative care.
I see an issue that preventative health will go a long ways to making emergency issues less significant because the slow response time to get from here, let's say, to a trauma center. From what I was looking up, federal funds cover about half the costs. So let's say we save $17 for every dollar we spend if we work on more preventative issues. I know it's difficult to get people to put down the chocolate bar and all that stuff, but that's one way.
Smith was followed by Damon Connolly, who hypothesized strategies to fix current issues with mobile clinic access and railed against the Trump administration's healthcare policies.
That's the top issue I hear about is accessibility and affordability to healthcare. And we know in rural communities in particular, It's often clinics, and it's often bootstrapping creative ideas like mobile care and clinics as well. So on one hand, if there are regulatory impediments to that happening, and this is invaluable to learn about, my job is to work with the local communities and figure out, is it a legislative fix or a regulatory change that we can make to better help it happen, and then also the reimbursement rates. Let's talk about that. Right now, courtesy of Trump and MAGA, we are facing a $1 trillion cut in Medi-Cal, which is the lifeblood of healthcare to many of our communities, particularly rural and underserved. That is unacceptable.
Tief Gibbs emphasized fixing mobile clinic access issues through equivalent reimbursements.
With respect to this particular rural healthcare situation, and the fact that these mobile health clinics don't always follow the original care model that the reimbursements were made for. There's a couple of different legislative and policy solutions that I like. And one of them is called, it's called site neutral reimbursement. So for example, if I go get an MRI at the hospital, I pay $3,000. But if I go to a local MRI place and they charge me $350, well, their reimbursement is going to pay the hospital more. Well, it needs to be site neutral, meaning no matter where you get the medical care done, it should be the same price.
The second healthcare question asked of the candidates concerned the possible closing of many rural hospitals, including local ones, due to funding issues. This is a question where the two Republican candidates differed greatly in understood on-the-ground facts versus Democrat Damon Connolly. We'll begin with Damon's response, where he expressed concern over the current situation for rural hospitals.
We have clinics and hospitals elsewhere literally closing or on the verge of closing. So what we have done right now is provide immediate bridge funding to a lot of these healthcare institutions that are at risk. So we recently did a $25 million special budget allocation to keep hospitals open that are literally in threat of imminent closure. So we're going to keep fighting back on the proposed cuts. We are going to look at raising new revenue, not on individuals, but on the largest corporations who are getting unprecedented tax breaks right now, I should say, not on the middle class, at least. And again, my vision, and I know it's shared by many, is that we ultimately move more toward a universal care for everyone under a single payer model. I was a principal co-author of the CalCare proposal again this session.
Tief Gibbs and Aaron Smith both disagreed with Damon on the facts of this issue, and both claim rural hospitals are not in danger. You'll hear Tief Gibbs followed by Aaron Smith on the issue of rural hospitals being at risk of closure.
I just want to be clear that there is no hospital in Sonoma County, I don't know about Mendocino, that is currently announcing closure due to Medicare or Medicaid cuts. What they do is they acknowledge financial strain. Also, the Medicare, Medicaid cuts their cut is not really the right word. You know, that's a misnomer. What it is, it's a procedural issue, and they're just asking people to reapply. And that's actually a really good idea because it cuts off the fraud that if people are still on the books, they're getting money, they don't qualify, et cetera. State of California has a responsibility to manage the fraud, and they're not doing it. It's out of control.
I'm not seeing these hospitals closing down very much. Where are they closing down? They're still open. They're still servicing. They're still emergency departments. I'm still seeing plenty of immediate care centers all over the place. As Tief mentioned, I see a lot of fear-mongering, but I'm not seeing much beyond that. Yes, I'm seeing a lot of fraud. When I worked in
EMS, I saw it all the time. And that's one thing that drove me out of that field was fraud. And that needs to be addressed first and foremost before anything else.
Next was the issue of homeowners insurance, which is both a cost and coverage problem for many Californians, especially in high fire risk areas. Damon Connolly began the discussion, emphasizing prevention and forest management, along with requirements that should be placed on insurance companies.
So it's two things. One is preventing large-scale wildfires. I mentioned the climate bond earlier. One of the main sections of that, which I authored, is around wildfire prevention, $1.5 billion over 10 years. And the key now is to get that money back to our communities. That includes a huge push on home hardening. We know that wildfire prevention, in addition to maintaining healthy forests, managing vegetation, that ties into the insurance crisis. So my bill, Assembly Bill 1, which was groundbreaking last year, strengthens what's known as a Safer from Wildfires program. It says that if you are doing everything we're asking you to do around your own home, you should be getting discounts on your insurance coverage, and that should be meaningful.
Tief Gibbs blamed the current in-state home insurance situation on Democrats in Sacramento and a lack of water storage.
This whole situation is a result of the disaster in Sacramento. The Democrats having supermajority, being in the state, the insurance commissioner, I mean, these people are just inept. It's just a result of really bad policy. We've got to figure out, number one, we need water. We still don't have any additional water storage, even though we passed a bond, I think, like at least 10 years ago. All the money's been spent, but nothing's been built. That's a disaster. So we need more water. We need more local reservoirs.
Aaron Smith followed Tief's comments by suggesting new requirements for home insurers.
You would want them to pay up PDQ. How do you do that? You say, well, if you make a policy and you sell it, you have X many days to pay it. Otherwise, you're going to get hit with a big fine. So it's going to be multiple of paying out what the settlement would be. So they'll be happy to pay people. That's number one. Number two, if they don't want to insure, if they're leaving the state, we need to find out why are they leaving the state? Is it just not cost effective? Well, they used to insure in the state of California, and did we have more fires or less in the last 20 years versus 80 years ago versus 200 years ago? I mean, what's changed?
The District 2 Senate candidates were then asked about the issue of climate change and how they would address it. Tief Gibbs denied that man-made climate change exists at all.
So the first thing I'm going to do is reject the premise of the question. The idea that humans are causing any major catastrophic climate change is not true, and it's continuously being disproved. In fact, I forget which organization it was, just recently came out and said all this catastrophic modeling is not even accurate. It's not true.
Aaron Smith had similar comments to Tief Gibbs and also denied the existence of man-made climate change while asserting additional pseudoscience about our atmosphere.
We've had an atmosphere for close to 4 billion years. It's not changing now. We've had ice ages. We've had deciduous trees on the north slope of Alaska. I'm not going to accept anything about climate change. That's a load of bull when it comes to human impact. What plants require is carbon dioxide to grow. Without it, plants will die.
Unlike the other candidates for state senator, Damon Connolly expressed that man-made climate change exists and put the onus on large-scale polluters to pay for damages to our environment.
The main mechanism we're using is our cap and invest program. So it's market-based, and the idea is to ratchet down emissions from the biggest polluters over time. but also it creates funding for climate reduction and mitigation programs as well. So we just reauthorized that last year, and part of it is actually utilizing the climate credit to reduce our outrageous utility bills right now. So we're hoping to continue work on that.
After hearing our highlights of the California District 2 State Senate race debate, we hope you have a better understanding of the candidates on the ballot. Damon Connolly, Aaron Smith, and Tief Gibbs will square off in the primary election for the District 2 State Senate seat on June 2nd. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. A proposed cannabis farm expansion has some issues Humboldt County's Planning Commission is concerned about. Daniel Mintz reports.
A Carlotta area cannabis farm is seeking to expand, but water use issues and a neighboring property owner's complaint about odor will complicate county approval. The permit hearing for the expansion was on the consent agenda of the Humboldt County Planning Commission's May 7th meeting, but it was continued to May 21st. The floor was open to discussion and public comment, however, and there was a lot of it. The permit application from Carlotta Gardens LLC is for a 20,000 square foot expansion of an existing 50,000 square foot combination mixed light outdoor cannabis farm in the Carlotta area. With the expansion, the farm's permitted annual water use will increase to 1.76 million gallons sourced from a groundwater well. That's a doubling of current water use, and it was discussed in this exchange between Commissioner Lorna McFarlane and Senior Planner Cliff Johnson.
I think y'all are probably sick of hearing me say this, my concerns with, you know, over-extracting from groundwater. I say it every time. So I would lean towards not allowing a excessive amount of water draw. I do have to ask staff, heaven forbid a neighbor's well was to run dry, does the water allocation, this excess water allocation that this permittee would have, are they allowed to do other things with that water, such as sell it?
Well, the limitation that would get approved on the use of the well here would be limited only to their use for cannabis irrigation. So they could potentially start a water sale business or use it for other crops or residential purposes, and there's really no regulation on those things unless it was a discretionary permit for the use.
Then my general thought was I don't think we should be continuing to over permit water use. I mean, I think some of the water use we permit is already potentially excessive, and I think without a watershed scale groundwater assessment, we're in very murky territory. I've been outvoted every time, but those are my thoughts. I would not allow the doubling of water.
During a public comment period, a neighbor of the farm mentioned concerns about water use, but most of her commentary was on another issue.
We are neighbors of the grow that's already there. It smells terrible when the wind's blowing our direction, which it usually is. We're only one field away from them. It stinks like crazy. Sometimes when they have to open the flaps to air out their grow place, it smells like an actual skunk is in our yard. And of course, we're concerned about the water. Everybody in Carlotta is on a well, including us. And like I said, my husband and I are getting older. Our house is going to be for sale, and who wants to buy a house that smells of marijuana all the time?
Those comments resonated with Commissioner Peggy O'Neill.
I want to bring up my sympathies towards this odor issue. For indoor, we've discussed in the past mitigation, but I don't know that that would work for outdoor, so that's off the charts. But I know that I live by a golf course, and if all of a sudden it turned into a cannabis grow that I couldn't, you know, go outside because it smelled so bad, I'd be highly concerned. And I know that people buy property by agriculture, but when that was initially zoned agriculture, it wasn't envisioned that it would be cannabis. Maybe it would have been tomatoes or something that didn't smell. But I would not support this for that reason alone.
Planning Director John Ford said, quote, part of the struggle here is the interface between residents and ag. The county does require odor mitigation in community plan areas, which the farm is in, but part of the permit application is a request for an exception to those requirements. That and the scale of water use will be further discussed when the permit is reviewed at the Commission's May 21st meeting. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Michael McCaskill, Dennis Maher, Katie Phillips, Biana Frederico, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. A special thanks to our substitute engineer for the 6 p.m. broadcast of this show, Sheila O'Toole. Also thanks to our reporter for this broadcast, Daniel Mintz. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org and now streaming on podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmod.org. Redwood Community Radio is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Sikyone, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging and acknowledge the ongoing spiritual, cultural, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.